With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
No one intervened on behalf of...
And now, coming to you live from atop the Goldenrod City Radio Tower, it's the one, the only... Puckle TCG Cast!
And welcome to the 22nd episode of the Puckle TCG Cast. I am your special host today, Trainer Thatch. Jushiro is on vacation, so I'm filling in for him today. And today I have my awesome co-host,
Gator.
And Heidi Craig.
And so Heidi is a guest today, and I'd like you to introduce yourself a little bit before we begin. Just so everybody knows who you are. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
I'm Heidi Craig. I've been a judge and organizer for probably about 20 years. I've played Pokemon the entire time. I've had some success in the game with placing very high at the first East Coast Super Trainer Showdown, taking second place. I've done well at some nationals, along with winning some cities and doing top eights at states. My kids have also found great success in the game. My son was actually a national champ his last year in seniors, Orion Craig. And Eric Craig was a phenomenal Pokemon player for many years who never really got to first place but put a lot of decks in the format and did T8 at Worlds once or twice.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
Not to mention, she's like the person for Florida Pokemon. She's judged every Worlds but one, like almost every nationals except for a couple. Is like the go-to organizer, has one of the best reputations online of people for running events, and this is you want to talk about like penalty guidelines and rules and somebody who's been enriched in the history of Pokemon. It's Heidi, so we're very honored today to have her on the show.
Absolutely. So we have questions for you later, but we're gonna jump into the news first and foremost. And so let's jump into the news real quick, because there are and all to the news. So in the news, we've got a variety of things. So first up is this Trevenant and Phantup in Sun and Moon 2. The Phantup isn't anything spectacular, in my opinion.
That's not the fact. The fact of the matter is, with Phantup, it's not spectacular. The Phantup with Ascension's better.
Yeah.
But this Phantup and Trevenant are both grass type.
Yeah, these are grass
type. Forest of Giant Plants, having Phantup means that since Phantup's a grass type, you can evolve it immediately with Forest of Giant Plants out.
Would that work even if you know the rules better than I? If you had grass Phantup and then you had psychic Trevenant?
Yep, because the effect is on the grass type base.
That's interesting. I don't know if there's any place for that in the meta, but that'd be fun.
Well, nah, not right now, because I feel like structurally speaking, the Ascension Phantup's better, because you can expand it, you can Jirachi, you can Wally. There's a lot of ways to get the turn one item lock, and if you are going second, you can use Ascension, get the item lock.
Yeah.
What this is going to be good for is the Vileplume deck, because Trevenant.
I saw that. That one's a lot of fun.
120, and it's got, for a double colorless, Poltergeist, 30 damage times the... it's 30 times. Your opponent deals per hand. The attack does 30 damage times the number of trainer cards in your opponent's hand. So if you've got them locked with Vileplume and they cannot play any item cards, you are now hitting their active Pokemon for insane amounts of damage just by using this double colorless attack. And it's super splashable because it is a DCE.
Yeah.
It's also weak to fire times 2, and it's got a retreat cost of 2.
That's not too bad.
Yeah, and this is going to be an SM2, which is going to be released in Japan coming up like this week. And it should be in Guardians Rising on May 5th.
Yeah. Wait, this one will be in... Oh, yeah, it's SM2. I just thought 2 plus in my head for some reason, but it's not. Nope. It's 2
plus. 2 plus will be the third set for us.
It'll be the third set, and then it'll probably be sometime in, like, August. It'll come out, or late July. So the next one we also have is a couple new cards, a couple new GXs. We have Tapu Fini GX and Darkrai GX as well that were announced. So Tapu Fini GX HP 170. One colorless energy for Aqua Ring for 20 damage, and you can switch with one of your bench Pokemon, which is really cool. Not probably the reason to use this. You have Hydro Shoot for 2 water, 1 colorless Hydro, and you discard 2 water energy attached to this Pokemon and do 120 damage to one of your opponent's Pokemon. Is it just one? Can you snipe on the bench?
Yes.
Like that? That's awesome.
With that wording, you'd be able to snipe off the bench.
Yeah.
Doesn't apply weakness and resistance for bench Pokemon.
Yeah. And then you get Tapu Storm GX for 1 water, which allows you to shuffle your active Pokemon, your opponent's active Pokemon, and all of the cards attached to it into the deck. If your opponent has no bench Pokemon, this attack fails, so you can't, like, you can't donk. Well, not donk.
That's to win the game.
Yeah.
Exactly. That would be broken for 1 water on a basic.
Yeah, right? That would be absolutely awful. And I mean, I think the fast raid Latios is bad enough for donking.
This one is a water-type Pokemon, and just like the other Tapus, it has no weakness and resistance. Mm-hmm. So with that 170 HP with no weakness, that's super strong.
Yeah.
I can see this going in the Water Toolbox deck.
Oh, yeah.
And because of Aqua Patch, which we'll discuss in a minute, that discarding the 2 water energy off this Pokemon is not a big deal at all. And then we have Darkrai GX, which is a dark Pokemon with 180 hit points and a basic, and it has an ability called Resurrection. Once during your turn, before your attack, if this card is in your discard pile, you may play this card to your bench and attach 1 dark energy from your discard pile to this card. So you get to resurrect this Pokemon, and in regular Darkrai, which speed Darkrai relies on having darkness energy attached, you're also accelerating your main Darkrai attacker. For its first attack, Dark Rift, 130 damage, is a 2 darks and a colorless, and the attack's damage isn't affected by resistance.
Does much even resist 30? Dark?
There's a couple things that resist
there
dark.
There might be a couple.
Psychics that resist dark, and I think dark might resist dark on a couple things.
It depends. Yeah, okay. Understandable.
And then the GX attack. For 2 dark and a colorless, dead end GX. If your opponent's active Pokemon is affected by a special condition, that Pokemon is now knocked out.
You could pair that with Ariados really well.
Yeah, you could pair it with Ariados. You can pair it with several different things.
Mm-hmm.
So this Pokemon is weak to fighting and resistant to psychic and the retreat cost of 2.
Yeah.
So this Darkrai GX could see a lot of play in several different things. Rainbow Road.
Definitely.
Mega Gardevoir would love to have it.
Mm-hmm.
So this Pokemon is doing things.
Absolutely.
And then that leads us to Water Aqua Patch, right?
Yes, Aqua Patch, yeah. Where it's just Dark Patch, and so you pull a water energy from your discard and put it on your benched Pokemon. On a benched water Pokemon, that is. But that's,
so it's just an item. It's not a supporter.
Yeah.
It's not anything. It is what Dark Patch was, but for water Pokemon.
Yep.
So
it's gonna make water really good.
So that acceleration, because we were talking smack about Wishiwashi GX having such a high cost, and then now this comes out, and it makes you eat your words.
Yeah, exactly.
It's so good.
it's a really good card. If they just, like, handed that card out as, like, a promo alone, I feel that would just be enough to mess so much stuff up.
I mean, a playset of Dark Patches, which is expanded, so it's not necessarily a big deal.
Yeah.
I ended up paying like $25 for a playset of
those. I believe that.
So grab your Aqua Patches while you can. This is a guarantee. Yes. Guaranteed this card is going to see play somewhere, and you're going to want to have it in your collection to go.
Yes. You're going to want a playset.
It's so cool.
Yeah.
And then in other news, we had the Oceania. I'm saying that so wrong. The Australian International Championship. It was shout out to Tablemon, one of our favorite YouTubers, who mm-hmm. came in second with Decidueye Vileplume. And it was won by a fellow named Pedro Torres, who played Volcanion. And he played Volcanion because in the top eight, there was, let me count, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Decidueye.
Yeah, Decidueye's seeing so much play right now.
It was insane. Well, one of them was not Decidueye Vileplume. Decidueye Lugia Mewtwo, which still Decidueye.
Decidueye in general is just getting a lot of play right now. I mean, I've seen a couple sets with Yanmega Break attached to it as well. I mean, I don't think that's nearly as good as Vileplume, but...
No. Decidueye's attacking partners, you usually like something like Tauros mm-hmm. or Lugia.
Yeah, that's super easy. Double color. Yeah. Exactly.
Usually what you do is you'll put Tauros out front, mm-hmm. and then you'll snipe damage with the Decidueye, and then nobody wants to hit your Tauros because...
Mm-hmm. Of rage.
You're setting yourself up for a knockout if you hit my Tauros.
Exactly. It's absolutely awful.
And it was also saw play in Sheffield and even an expanded Decidueye and Vileplume are making appearances. So that's another deck to look out for.
Yeah, that was just something you could tell right from the beginning. When you just, I mean, it is a three stage, but it gets forced to the giant plants. And I mean, it was just something you could see coming.
Listen, the best way to play Pokemon is to not let your opponent play Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly.
So lock them out of items and making sure they can't attack you. Best way to win.
Yep, exactly. That's how you play and win. oh, man. Yeah, grass is doing so well right now. Just with that, you can even run some of those decks with, like, no energy. It's nuts.
Yeah, I think I'm running 3 grass and 4 DCE in my Decidueye.
Yeah, it takes, like, no energy. Those cards are expensive right now, too. It's, like, $12 for a Decidueye GX.
Even more. I think last I checked, it was $15.
I was checking. I guess I bought cards last right before Oceania, so.
it really just depends. They're going to get 10s, though. So they're coming out in 10s, so don't be too worried.
Thank God.
But if you do want, and I go ahead and get your Tauroses now, because Tauros is like $5, mm-hmm. but it should go up eventually.
Yeah.
And Lugia is $10, and you want that in the deck as well. So, mm-hmm. And usually well,
Lugia,
3 shamans.
Lugia is getting a legendary battle deck.
Yeah, so is Ho-Oh.
In May. Yeah, in Ho-Oh. But the Lugia is better.
Lugia is better. Ho-Oh, you're only really seeing play in Expanded and Rainbow mm-hmm. Road or Dark War.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But yeah, that about does it for regular news. And then in Puckle news, we are organizing our tournament. We are setting out feelers for that. So stay tuned and listen. I should have more details for the next TCG cast. Mm-hmm. And you can see how you can get started playing. We're going to do a standard best of 3 style tournament, and we'll do it Swiss style. So even if you lose your first round, you're not necessarily out of the tournament. Mm-hmm. But like I said, come back in next week or week after next for more details.
Absolutely. And PuckleCon should be almost figured out by then as well. So that's it for the news. So we're going to go to the topical beach and just hang out on the beach.
Welcome to Topical Beach.
And on to the topical beach. So is that how he says it? That's how I say it.
Say however you want. It's excitable.
We've got Heidi Craig here, and she's got some awesome stories she was telling us before the show as well. So I am super excited to go into this. She already told us who she is and what she did. So I have a few questions, and Gator, feel free to like interrupt as often as you like, because that's our relationship. So I just, first and foremost, how did you get into the TCG? Like, I'm really interested in this.
Okay. So my ex-husband was a Magic player, and I wouldn't let my kids play Magic because I didn't like the dark cards for my kids.
Yeah.
And he was big time into Magic. And when they released Pokemon, the next door neighbor's kid came down with it, and he thought that would be great for them mm-hmm. to get into Pokemon. Now, I was not a trading card game player. I thought that was only for geeks.
Yeah.
So he goes to the store, gets them some theme decks, comes home, promptly goes to bed. Kids mm-hmm. are whining. I want to learn how to play. So I read the rule book, decided to teach them how to play. I was hooked. The next day, I spent $200 in booster packs, and I've played ever since. And I believe that was about a month and a half before Jungle was released.
Okay. That's really early. That's like right at the beginning.
Yeah, when we pulled a Charizard, we thought we were on top of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so no.
Everyone else. That was yeah. The card.
That was the card to have.
And it was really hard to get packs back then. Mm-hmm. Really, really hard to get packs. Like, seldom ever could you find packs. Then when you would find them, some stores would charge you $10 a pack.
Oh, wow.
So you were constantly driving everywhere just trying to get your hands on some packs.
Oh, wow. That is really intense.
It was. We would drive everywhere and stand in line for hours just trying to get booster packs.
Oh, my gosh.
They just couldn't keep them in stock because
it was the craze.
Mm-hmm. They didn't see that one coming, I don't think. But there was this really good store in Orlando you could wait in line for and get really regular price jacks, then come back here and sell them for $10 a pack and make a lot of money back.
Oh my gosh. Oh man. Okay, let's see. I have. So you said you played in the Super Trainer Tournament in, when was that? 2000? Was that the year? Am I correct?
I believe
2001. All right. So what was that like? Like just getting into it, and were your kids playing, stuff like that? Tell us the story, essentially.
So to get into the Super Trainer Showdown, you had to go to these different tours at malls and get a golden ticket for placing well enough in the tournament to qualify to play the Super Trainer Showdown. And I didn't place that well, but my kids did. They got the golden tickets. So by default, I got the invite to play the Super Trainer Showdown as well because my kids got the golden tickets. And then, so you get these little tickets in the mail that give you the right to play the Super Trainer Showdown. We were super excited. Just couldn't wait to go to Secaucus, New Jersey to play this. There was such an adventure getting there because our car broke down in South Carolina.
Oh, wow.
So we ended up driving literally straight through after that incident. And I, on no sleep, I started playing the Super Trainer Showdown.
Yeah.
And there was, and back then, I wasn't real familiar with who the good players were and who they weren't. So when I managed to make it the top cut, of course, everybody wanted to know, who's this person named Heidi Craig? We've never heard of her. She's not on Poke Beach. She's not on these websites. Who is she? And then when I beat Jason Klosinski in top eight, he was my first round in, just everybody went crazy. I think I beat Israel in top eight. Then I beat Jason in top four. And everybody just went crazy because Jason Klosinski, everybody knew who Jason was because he played so well.
Yeah.
And then that was really exciting for me anyhow. So, and then I went on to take second place to Tom Hanley. So the Super Trainer Showdown back then, 483 people was huge for Masters.
Yeah.
It was a giant gathering. So you thought you won like a really, really big tournament. Mm-hmm. Now today's numbers are much larger at Nationals than that. But back then that was a big deal.
That's a small regional now.
Like- yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Pokemon hit its lull, when, you know, Wizards of the Coast did everything they could to kill the game, mm-hmm. it took Pokemon now, PUI, which is now transitioned into the Pokemon International Company, a long time to rebuild those numbers. I remember after why Wizards of the Coast killed the game, 89 people out of states was phenomenal numbers.
Wow.
If you got 89 people out of a state tournament, you had one of the bigger tournaments. I remember doing one in Florida. We got 109 players, and we were the biggest tournament almost in the U.S. We were really up there in numbers after WOTC done what they had done. WOTC stands for Wizards of the Coast. That's how I just referenced them because I worked for them for many years. So they did a really good job because they took out the Masters division at the end.
Yeah.
They just cut them out. And then they did the professor tournaments for the Masters division. You were a professor, and I took second place in that tournament in Seattle, Washington. And they hired babysitters to watch our kids, which was super cool. Because the kids would play during the day, and we would have to play at night on every night. We would just play so many rounds per night. And they hired these kids to watch our children. They had beanbags and movies, and they could go play tournaments and win packs. So you didn't have to mess with your kids. I just dumped them on these people I didn't even know, didn't care, don't kill them. And then you just got to play the tournament, which was – I thought that was super classy. I mean, they might have gotten rid – and there was a lot of people that came and played the professor tournament. And I believe I played Zapdos, Clefable, I think, in that tournament when they did the professor one. So that was really neat. I took second place, and that's when we got the custom backpack. You got first editions of all the rares of a couple different sets, four sets of them. And that's where I won the trainer A and B deck that they originally put out in the lead kit with the red bordered card seal.
Oh, wow.
And I think Jason Klosinski and I did the research, and we believe to this day there are only six complete sets undamaged of trainer A and B deck sealed, and I own one of them. And I won it in that tournament for the professors. That's when awesome. I took second place. So that was really cool to get. And those are really unique to have. Not a lot of people have them. Because when you started the league in Pokemon, everybody opened up the decks. The cards got damaged. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew where Pokemon was going. So it's really rare for someone to have a set of those that we believe to this day.
That's awesome.
We tried to push the numbers, but we got down to six people we know that have them.
That's so crazy.
So that's how I won those in that professor tournament. And I never even played the first place player in that tournament, which was crazy. I never even got a chance to play him. I don't know how that worked out. That's when you could ID and it just worked out. I never played the person that played first. So that was a really fun event. But it took a long time after WotC cut out the Master Division for Pokemon to come back. That's when they started the free tournament gimmicks to try and drive the numbers. That's how free tournaments came to be.
Yeah.
They tried keeping the entry fee, but attendance just wasn't growing. Mm-hmm. So then they tried to lower the fee. It just wasn't going where they wanted it to go. Then they had to instituted just, hey, everybody plays for free, just trying to resurge and get the Pokemon numbers growing again. And I remember when Pokemon was still trying to build up the numbers after Wizards of the Coast did what they did to the game. One of the people in Pokemon said, we knew we were a success when you could Google Pokemon and the first 10 websites weren't porn. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever because, you know, it was true.
that's so crazy.
So that was when they decided that they were a success. It was really funny when they said that to me. So growing Pokemon back was a really, really hard task.
Would you say that was the closest it's been to, like, dying out was after that?
When WotC got rid of the 15 and up and then it transitioned into PUI, which was what it was called at the time, Pokemon was pretty much dying. I mean, I got 30 people at a pre-release and I was lucky.
Wow.
So Pokemon was really dying. I was doing most of the state of Florida at that time, from Miami to Jacksonville to Orlando to Tampa to everywhere, just Gainesville, just trying to build it up. And it was just dying. But when they instituted the free tournaments, then things started to slowly grow, but it took years to recover from that, to recover from what they did, because a lot of people were very salty that they got rid of the division, and it just...
Well, I would be, too, if I was a master. Yeah, it's like, exactly. Oh, well, we don't really want you playing Pokemon anymore, so...
Yeah, and WotC's theory was, you grow up, you play Pokemon, then you grow up and play Magic, so they saw Pokemon as just a way to feed people to Magic. That's all they saw Pokemon was there, because Magic was their game. They owned it. They created it. That's where their money was.
Mm-hmm.
And then when Pokemon got the rights back in the beginning, they just – the first tournament they ever gave us, it was DS and card game combined.
What?
The first tournament they gave us, the first rounds were Pokemon card game. And then the last three rounds were DS games.
Why would you do that?
Because they thought they would combine them, and it would be more fun for everybody if they just combined them. So you showed up to play this tournament. Your first rounds were trading card. Then you had to switch to DS, so you had to do both. And people didn't really like that idea. They weren't real keen on that.
I'd still like to try it, though.
Well, they did that at Nationals this past year during the side events.
Because you had to do
Pokken at the same time. But they did something similar.
But back then, there wasn't a lot of crossover for TCG players that were competitive VGC players at all.
Absolutely not.
Tournaments. You just played the TCG, and the VGC, and it was really hard to get IVs, and you had to put a lot of time into the game.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's a little bit easier to get the IVs and stuff.
It wasn't until fourth gen that it made it like clear on how to do it, because back in third gen, they didn't even have the
special. You were blind.
A lot of research online. I believe Orion back in the day had almost 500 hours in a DS game trying to do EV training and figure it out and EV train Pokemon. It was ridiculous back in the day compared to what it is now.
But I'm aware.
That was the first tournament they gave us, and it was not well received by the TCG players at all. They didn't want to play the VG proportion, so they kicked that idea right to the curb, and they're like, okay, never again on this one. But it had really cool prizes. We won a $200 gift certificate to the Pokemon Center.
Ooh.
Back when it existed.
yeah. And I think that's when I think Eric came in second or third place for the 200, or maybe it was first. I can't remember. But yeah. And we got some really cool stuff from there. Yeah. They had some really nice stuff in that store. But that was their first run at a tournament, and that didn't go so well. And then soon after that, we had more of an influence. They took the regular PTOs who'd been doing it for years and said, what do we need to do to find success? So I actually helped Pokemon in the beginning lay out their PTO program with Susan Scheid, the person in charge, deciding how things would run, how we would get paid, when we would run tournaments and things like that. So I had a lot of input on that in the very base, the beginning, when they decided to start running tournaments, and then developing the penalty guidelines and how to just run tournaments in general, how to make them flow and what you needed to do and what needed to happen. I mean, their first Worlds they ran was really not their first Nationals they ran was just, they just came and got me out of a game and said, we need you now. And I was playing in it. And they're like, we just need you now. You just, they just took me out of my game. And that was it. I wasn't playing Nationals anymore. I was just done. It did not run well at all. In their first Worlds, I actually stepped in and saved them. And I was like, look, guys, this is how, and I ended up staying up most of the night trying to restructure Worlds and how it was going to run for them, and then work the next day to bail them out. So they didn't really have a good concept of how to run the tournaments. So in the beginning, it was kind of a little bit more difficult because they were coming from ground zero. Though everybody came from gaming companies, the actual running of big tournaments, there wasn't a lot of experience because people didn't run big tournaments back then.
Yeah.
So there was some growing problems in there.
Would you say it's better now? Oh, you're going on.
I think overall, the running of the tournaments is getting much better. On occasion, like at Worlds this year, you run into a couple snafus with logistics. Don't work out the way they did. Like, we had a line 3 blocks down the road with everybody trying to sign in and register. But it's just, there's so many people trying to register at once. But I think overall, they've improved the actual running. The one thing I think they've improved the most over time is hiring more staff to be able to handle the situations. And to be there, and the volunteers taking on a lot more volunteers. Back in the day, I don't feel like we really had a lot of, I mean, I look at the first Worlds picture and there was 12 of us in it, maybe 15 of us in it. It was really, really a tiny little staff. So I think overall they've hired a lot more people, and they try to focus on knowledge people who are really involved with the game and run a lot of tournaments. Sometimes I think the judging could be a little better.
That's, you're going to run into that, though, because it's mostly volunteers. And then the people that are bigger at the higher level, you know, they come in, they have their own style, they have their own way of doing it. And now they're, you've got people that are used to being chief, and now they're being told what to do. And that's pretty ego involved. And
it gets that way sometimes. It does. It does get that way sometimes. But that's, you know, that's where you really get to adopt the attitude. I'm part of a team and I'm not here for me. And like, I kind of have to sometimes check myself at the door and go, well, I wouldn't do it that way. But, and then sometimes I don't check myself at the door and go, have you thought about this? Just kind of do it and just kind of take it over and go, this is how I would, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, yeah, you just do that.
For those listening at home, I'm sitting here with Heidi, and she is so much of a Pokemon fanatic. You have no idea. She is playing Pokemon Go as we sit here and have this conversation.
I am only a little over a million shy of level 40, folks. I will get there.
That's really high. Okay.
So much Pokemon. I'm looking at an Ambipom hanging off the wall. And then she has a special, like, the Pokemon room, which we mentioned, that's just...
Yes.
It's full of Pokemon stuff. She has a room that's all full of TCG stuff. Like, Heidi's the real deal when it comes to this. I met Heidi through her league that she runs locally. So I was fortunate enough to be local and end up making friends with Heidi. So having played in the tournaments that she runs versus playing in other tournaments, she is so easygoing. It's great to have somebody that knows what they're doing. Like, there's no, like, waiting around for answers like you end up getting. There's no, like, waffling on things. It's... This is what it is. This is how it is. Fix the game state. Go.
Yeah.
So it's, you definitely experience tells when it comes down to it. For sure.
Let's see. She already answered some of my questions.
I fault Pokemon for at this point with their new tournament structure, with states and battle roads going away and League Cups becoming store based, which I do run League Cups for some stores, is it's hard to train good judges now. Where before we had a lot of opportunity to work with judges and train judges, and they had a lot of exposure to you for you to really teach them. I feel like their new tournament structure is really hindering that process. and the judging overall is becoming somewhat weaker in the game. Because I used to, at any given point, be training like five people, just giving them all the information I could get into their head every time they worked with me. Because they had, I used to run a Battle Roads every Saturday and Sunday for a month straight. So they had eight tournaments to come, get the exposure. Then I used to run 12 cities. Then you had the states. Then you had the regionals. So they had so many opportunities to come and judge and really learn stuff. But now that shops are doing it, they're just hiring whoever's there. They think they got it, but they don't.
Mm-hmm.
I really feel like the new tournament structure. It's the one thing I just don't like about the tournament structure is the opportunity to train and work with people to teach them how to become good judges. I think that's really becoming challenging at this point. It's where people are having to figure it out on their own. Some of them do, some of them don't. And it's not easy to figure it out on your own. Mm-hmm. It becoming a good judge, you really need a good mentor, I feel. And I've always felt that way.
Yeah.
So that's part of the problem I have with the new structure.
Let's see. Yeah, that's the thing too. Cause like you have more frequent league challenges that you could have, but nobody wants to show up to a league challenge cause it's not worth the points. You're not getting the CP you need to advance. You know, you're trying to go to the regionals and like get your couple league cups and that's it. Mm-hmm. So.
Not only that, but then when it comes around to the league cups, a lot of people don't even hire staff because they're so small.
Yeah.
There's not an opportunity to train at them either. And a lot that arises to fix and just the organization. What do I do when I get there? How does the deck check flow? How does the in-between round stuff flow? How does one thing flow to the next to keep the tournament moving?
Mm-hmm.
So when they do get to the bigger ones, they get what the system is, and then they get the exposure to how to rewind game states, how you deal with troublesome parents who are upset about something that got done, which is the very most fun part of the game. You know, that takes a lot of skill because parents are real protective of their children. So when they're in your face, you've really got to learn how to handle them to calm them down and get them to understand what occurred.
So what's worse, crying juniors or crying masters?
Yes, I think that's a good question.
You know, what's crying masters?
No,
because juniors, it's so fun when they do. It's not fun, but when they're crying, it's so – I just have this knack to go up and talk to them, and by the end you can make them just be laughing and having a good time.
That's a good judge.
Forget about it. But the masters, oh, my gosh, 3 weeks later, they're still on Facebook. Still shedding a tear. So it's a little bit easier to console the juniors, I feel – and get them smiling and happy and turn the situation into a positive thing than with the masters. The masters just have a tendency to stay kind of salty.
Yeah. If there's a place to start a salt mine anywhere, it's at a Pokemon tournament. I've seen that in person more than once.
Yeah.
I can believe it. Yeah.
It breaks my heart when the juniors cry, but it's really fun by the end to have them laughing and in a good mood and just happy to be there. So I usually get really good positive results from a crying junior. From a crying master, I just walk away.
There's no fixing that.
No, there really isn't.
You mentioned it a little bit before. We talked about it before the show. What is your opinion on TPCI? I think a lot of people in the community have this question. They're being absolutely awful at announcing event dates this year. And I hope maybe you can shed some light on that.
I know there's a lot that goes into it when you plan big events. You have to do it quite a ways out. And I just sometimes think, I'm not even sure, because they don't really share a lot with us when it comes to this stuff, that I don't know that they plan way enough out. And it seems like they're always just trying to find the next venue and a crunch. Because when you're talking about mass crowds of people to put them somewhere, there are venues, sometimes you have to book 2 to 3 years in advance to get those kind of numbers and to get that kind of space on the weekends that you specifically want, because they're very specific in their weekends because they've got to think about international players. When it comes to events, they've got to think about American players. They're trying to figure out schools, people that can work. Because overseas, it's very serious when you miss school. Mm-hmm. It's not as lax as the U.S. So they've got to put a lot of thought into these weekends. And since they want specific weekends for big events, they just need to get more ahead of the game, I feel, be 2-3 years out. And they might be, but it doesn't feel that way.
Well, it's hard, too, because I think, like, this year specifically with Worlds, you had the Pokemon Go phenomenon that, you know, nobody anticipated it being this huge thing, and you had so many people come back into the game. And then they book this small venue, like you said, 2 or 3 years out. What are they supposed to do when 3 times the number of people show up at the door?
And that's capping the event, because Nationals last year, I think people were trying to buy seats for $300, the people that had seats in the event.
Wow.
And trade out some. I know for a fact someone paid a lot of money for a seat in Nationals. So, and there's only so many you can honestly have at an event. When it comes down to just logistics and planning out a staff that far in advance, there's really a lot that goes into event. I ran a regionals, and I think my regionals maybe had 500 TCG players, 300 about-ish, a little bit less than 300 VG players. I could easily say that I worked on that event for 7 days a week, every weekend from morning till night. I guesstimate I probably had 200, 300 hours in that event before I even walked in the door.
Wow.
Just all the things that go into it, the planning of the staff, the gathering of the items, the supplies. It's a lot of work to do the big events. It is a little bit disappointing in how they don't announce things in a timely manner to really make your plans, and how late they inform players that had even earned stipends to Australia. They were just, it was coming down to, well, the event's in 2 weeks and I have nothing. So I don't understand where the problems are coming in. I do feel like they're reshifting their departments, trying to hire more people, trying to get it more organized, and start where one person maybe did several things. That's gotten so big at this point, they're having to break it out into different positions and bring different people on. But it's really hard to catch those people up to speed and understand how the whole system works. And I think that lags them a little bit in that area.
Do they ever solicit the more, you know, you've got PTOs, which you mentioned before, premier tournament organizers, which are not a thing anymore. You don't get to become that. I believe you mentioned it to me.
But I'm still – all of us are still grandfathered in. I still have that title.
You're still grandfathered in. So, like, yes. The PTOs, the regional runners, do they solicit you guys for feedback at all? Do they come to you and ask, you know, hey, what can we do better?
Yes. When every Nationals and Worlds that they run, they start a feed, because we have a special feed on the TCG website under our account. And they go, the good, the bad, the ugly. What did you like? What did you didn't like? Where could we improve? What did you see the problems were to this event? And then you get to put a lot of feedback in that way. And then if you've really stumbled upon a good idea, they'll actually email you and ask you further questions. Well, can you give us a better? And an interesting story was that I started a deck check team at my regionals, and I had put Miranda in charge of it.
Miranda, your daughter.
Yeah, my daughter, Miranda Craig, who's played Pokemon, and she's, I should mention, she's done pretty good in it since I brought the other two kids. I just put her in charge of this deck tech team, gave her a list of things I wanted accomplished to get rid of that headache and have someone in charge of it. And it changed the dynamic of the event. I went to Pokemon. I said, this is an awesome idea. You need just, it used to be they'd pull decks and any judge available would just go over there and check them and be pulled off the floor. I said, no. And I just kept hounding Pokemon. You need a deck check team. And then finally, Pete said, fine. You bring Miranda at her own, at your expense. You have her run this team and show us how it goes and what this does. At the end of Nationals, Pete's like, we will have a deck check team forever. That was – and my daughter actually is in charge to their deck check team to this day for Nationals and Worlds.
That's awesome.
But
it,
I convinced them. And so they are open ideas, but they didn't get what a deck check team really meant. And I brought her, told them what she needed. They gave it to her. And they were like, you are right. It just changed the dynamic of the event. There's just people there in charge of it. Understand what's going on, pulling the list, getting it organized. And it just took a lot of headache off of the judges who were getting pulled off the floor. Then we weren't there to make the ruling. So they do learn things and take ideas from people. That's just one example. There are other people that have brought things to the table besides me. I don't want to feel like I'm the only one that brought an idea to the table, but they've adopted it ever since. And it's made a big difference.
I'd like to clarify for our newer listeners that deck checks are a certain amount of deck checks are required between rounds. Mm-hmm. So having to get these done, that slows up everything else because you can't start the next round until the decks are checked, because you have to have the players with the decks in their hands. So being able to speed that up, because I can tell you from experience, in between rounds of tournaments, it can take forever or it can be like that. So that's pretty significant that they implemented that, because you gave them feedback. So that it makes me feel better to know that they are at least listening and soliciting to people that know what they're talking about.
Yeah,
they do. They really try to take something to heart if you're trying to explain it to them. I did have to bring Miranda there. And then she took a staff support for the weekend, and you know, and it was really cool to do that. So now it's just the thing that they've adopted, mm-hmm. and it makes the tournaments better. So they do listen to experienced people, and they come up with good ideas.
That's awesome.
I believe so.
All right. You've been judging for a long time. What's been your favorite part of just being a judge in these past however many years?
My favorite part about judging, which caters to my personality, is teaching other people how to be good judges, giving them the knowledge and helping them be better at judging. I've always just enjoyed teaching people how to do things. That's one of my more favorite parts. My favorite part of being an organizer is I always felt like that I provide families with an opportunity to come have fun with their children and have a great time and just getting to know them. And that was always my way of kind of just giving something back to the world that hopefully influenced their lives in a more positive way to give them something to do. I've always just believed in that concept and still to this day. And it's really incredible how long I've known some of these kids. I knew them when they were 8, 9, and now they're in their 20s. So I think that's my favorite part of being an organizer is just seeing the families come together, having a great time, and the young kids coming together, having fun and forging these friendships. And it's all because of a game.
Yeah. I feel like I can relate a lot to that. But
I mean, I've met some of the most phenomenal people in this game of my life. And my mom and my sister constantly made fun of me because I played Pokemon for years. And then I begged them 3 years ago, come to one regionals and you'll get it. And my mom and my sister are hooked. They love Pokemon. They're like, we get
that's
it
awesome.
Now. And they have made Facebook friends with players. And when they show up to events, people are hugging them and talking to them. And they're like, we finally get Pokemon after all these years. It's about the people. And the game is just something that happens. And that's how I've always seen Pokemon. Like I told people, I'd have left Pokemon a long time ago if it was just for the guard game. I stayed because the people are some of the most mm-hmm. fascinating people you'll meet and where a lot of my great friends have come from.
That's awesome.
It is.
That is. Yeah, no, I understand completely. Like just doing this show, same exact thing. let's see. What else do I have? What do you think of the current like TCG community? Is it better or worse than it used to be? Or just in the players? Have you noticed any toxicity or anything?
I feel like with all the money they're now putting on the line at the bigger events, it's gotten a little more rules lawyering. I really have the feeling it's gotten a lot more rules lawyering where they're calling judges for simple things, trying to get those penalties, trying to get those prize penalties, trying to push themselves over the edge. And one small thing is becoming this giant ordeal of what ifs questions and where before, when there wasn't so much money on the line, I don't feel like that was as much of an issue as it is becoming. And then I feel like it's attracting more players where they're in it just for the money, that they weren't previous Pokemon players. They're coming into this community as a way to just try and make the money from other gaming, where Pokemon's always just been this more fun, we support you kind of community. We're going to help you be better players. We're going to, you know, we'll let you do take backs. And I feel like now it's becoming a little bit different because of the big money they've put up.
Mm-hmm.
But there are still always going to be those great players. And there's only going to be, I guess, with the sheer numbers and the number of rounds you play, by sheer volume, you're only going to hit those people maybe one or two rounds out of the 9 you play. And then if you make top cut, so you're not going to get a lot of exposure to it, but I feel like there's a lot more of it going on. And then there's a lot of pressure with limited amount of tournaments to get to Worlds, and emotions are getting really high at a League Cup. You know, they're really getting a lot of emotion at a League Cup because they're just so desperate for these points because they're so hard to get. You consistently have to travel to a lot of regionals and a decent amount of League Cups just to even have a shot, but you not only do you have to travel to them, you have to perform at them mm-hmm. in a very high place. So I really feel like there's a lot of pressure now too, and that's really starting to affect players and realizing how difficult this task is becoming and how expensive it's becoming to keep up with it along with getting the cards.
Yeah, because it's not just the cards anymore. Now you need a plane ticket every other weekend, and with the CP requirements, if you don't place, then that's another regional you have to afford to fly to. And the fact of the matter is, there's only a handful of regionals at this point in time, because they did talk about doing the special events. They wanted to like offer special events where you can get to see, but they're just not showing up yet. So I was in the same boat. Like, I started the season, I was like, maybe I'll try this, but then seeing what the required and seeing how tough Florida is, just the caliber of players in this area is way too high for me. There's way too many names I see at the top 8, top 32 in all these regionals that I would have to, that I faced the last League Cup we were at. Like,
that's always been Florida's reputation. When we used to, we always had these giant groups back in the day that traveled to the States because we could drive to them. Florida has always been a state of good caliber players. We would drive to a lot of events and Florida would take a lot of the top spots. I mean, the Sable Houses were originally Florida players that left, and they would take a lot of the top slots when they were down here too. But Florida's always been a very challenging state with a high concentration of good players. I'm not sure why that is.
I don't know. Maybe it's just the competition breeding it, because I know you got Grafton Roll here, Jose Marrero, Raul Reddy, Safraz.
Michael Canavis, who's good. There's a lot of people down here that still play well. Now you got Miranda, who's been doing really well too. The last couple events, she's made top 4 and 1. So you've got her now, Miranda Craig, making her way back onto the Pokemon scene.
Too many people to deal with. Let's hope Orion stays busy with his job so we don't get him back too.
Yeah, Orion's been dabbling in it, but he just shows up with a deck that someone built for him. But there are just a very, very high concentration of players that come up. That plays well consistently where they go. I think a lot of them have joined the ARG team too.
Yeah, some of them are on Team ARG. The meta deck's based out of Central Florida.
Yeah.
Chaos Gym's based out of Central Florida. It's just so many people.
Well, you've got the Miami people too. Daniel Altavilla down there, who's really good. You've got a couple people, Justin Sanchez, who used to play a lot, who was really good. So you've got a huge group in Miami that just come out of nowhere that are really good as well.
It's the Florida toughness, I guess. So I mean, I appreciate it. It makes me a better player. But I kind of wish we were in a softer area. You know, if this was more West Coast,
you could get a break every now and again.
Yeah, better chance of topping.
You just need to bring a lot of food that has some contaminant in it. So by round 2, they're all sick.
Hey, at the last League Cup, I was at the table next to Grafton, so I was happy. Like, I was working with Greninja, so it happens. So.
It does. It does. Mm-hmm. Well, when we traveled with them, I went to Alabama, and I made top 8 in Alabama States when we traveled there with them. And I was the only one in Florida that actually made top 8 and misplayed myself into a loss. I played Trevenant and let him play 2 supporters a turn, which didn't really go well for me.
No,
I
was like, you can't generally do that.
Night March. I don't lose to Night March 2 supporters per turn. So yeah, Florida is a tough state. And there's a lot of good players that used to play back in the day that just come out of the woodwork that haven't played forever and just start doing well again.
See, I think there's an innate skill to Pokemon. Like, I think that that's something you can learn. So even as the sets change and things like that, and it evolves as a game, you still have these basic skills that you need as a player. And that's something we try to talk about on the show a lot, is that nailing your basics, understanding how the game's played, how the game works, then you can, once you know how to play the game, you can pick up other decks and do well with them and continue to perform. Which leads me to one of my questions is, since you've played through pretty much every set, what has been your favorite format or set to have games playing out of? Like,
oh, the favorite format? Oh my gosh, I would have to say that the favorite format we had was back in the day when Blastoise CX was an evolution with Lugia X. That was a really, really fun format. And then, of course, when we got schooled at Worlds by Team Aqua Magma, that was a fun deck, but none of us knew it existed till the Japanese put us in our place. But I think that was my favorite time, was when the Blastoise CX and you had the Lugia X with the Steelix. There was just a wide, good, solid variety of decks that were just great to play. The SP era was fun, though I guess Luxray and Garchomp annoyed a lot of people.
Yeah, Luxray was nasty deck to come across.
It just ruled it. But I think back then that there was a lot of good, solid decks in the format you could really play and do well with. I really like that format. I'm a big fan of Blastoise because he's my favorite one, and you could play him in a deck. So that was really great for me. But yeah, I think that was my favorite time, and that was years and years ago. That was near the beginning. I think that's still one of my more favorite fun formats. It's always fun to go back and play the old. Sometimes go play the old.
How much cheaper was it back then too? Because I imagine now you need a playset of Shaman, which is going to run you, $160 and. You need, like,
I mean, back then there were some cards that were expensive, like the EXs, but not like, I mean, probably 8 to 20, like 20, 25. There was a time when you needed one card, Transceiver, which was really popular. Mm. That card got way out of control, becoming $20, $25. You needed four in every deck. Holland Transceiver, those became quite expensive. I mean, there were cards here and there that you needed in decks. I think, I mean, just Shaman, I think, is really the only thing out of control right now. And I think they should do something other than just reprinting Roaring Skies to control the cost. But mm-hmm. there were kind of cards back in our day that got a little out of hand.
Okay, so Shaman is still kind of unique, though, in that it's hit, like, the $75 a card mark at one point. Like,
I'm sure back in the day there was one or two cards that hit a really, well,
like,
really
Tropical
high
Beach,
mark.
I'm sure.
Yeah, Tropical Beach definitely did.
Yeah, Tropical Beach was one, and that was actually a playable card. But there were a couple cards here and there that would hit a high dollar amount. But I don't think it was required in every door. Transceiver was, and those got pricey. But, I mean, and people complained about that, but it wasn't quite as bad as Shaman. Like, you could get a playset for $40. Not, you know, I think...
One card for $40.
I think Shaman has left a bitter taste in everybody's mouth due to the sheer expense and how useful mm-hmm. the card is. But there were cards like that back in the day on occasion. And back then, people thought $40 was a lot of money because Pokemon decks were cheap. That was one of the mm-hmm. lures of Pokemon, I believe, for a lot of people was the game was really affordable to play versus Yu-Gi-Oh! And Magic and how... quickly, their cards spiraled out of control in cost.
Well, as of recently, the most successful, cheapest deck we've had is Greninja. And even then, that was $100 minimum to get mm-hmm. started with the deck. Like,
that's not terrible,
it's
though.
It's not terrible, but then every other deck that played Shaman is now $200 deck. Yeah. $300 deck. Mega Gardevoir at one point was a $400 deck. Like,
yeah. And that's where you got to become a savvy trader rather than a savvy buyer.
Get ahead of the curve, buy the playset at the beginning of the set.
Yeah. Well, no, you just got to get off that eBay, get out of tournaments, and become a savvy trader. Everybody just relies too much on eBay. You got to get out there and trade your little heart out, and you can do it. When people were selling Shamans for $15 before the set was released, I regret not buying every one of them. Not to sell, just to have.
Exactly. So splashable in every deck. But, I mean, it's just a point I wanted to bring across because we don't get a lot of perspective sometimes on this set. We have a lot of people that started playing, you know, the earliest players were in Heart Gold, Soul Silver days, not all the way back to base set. Mm-hmm. So I think it's nice to have some perspective on the cost and the...
I think just it's been a real recent thing where decks, because of certain particular cards, are getting expensive. Back in the day, we had a few cards that were costly, but I don't think anything like you see. I think back in the day, Lugia EX was like a $40 card, but you could only put one or two in a deck maybe. So there were cards that got a little out of hand, mm-hmm. but not, I guess, besides Transceiver, like it was like four for 40 or something that you had to have it in every deck. It was just nice to have it.
Well, speaking of, you know, the internet and eBay and being able to get your cards, have you seen much of how much impact did, like, the internet, you think, have on the different games? Because you go from a format where there's not a lot of net decking, not a lot of ability to go see what was just played in this tournament, whereas now you get, like, real-time updates in the tournament, and you know what everybody's playing is, and you know what's down to the list of the card. Do you think that's had any, like, major impact that you've noticed, or a lot of the same, a lot less?
Well, back then, we used to like all our deck lists to be super secret, so nobody knew what they were, and we were so frustrated if someone would release a deck list. That was just, you just did not do it. If I was an organizer and said I was going to post the top four deck lists, I would get so much hate. The one thing that I believe it does do, and this was a pro Magic player came into Pokemon who really wanted to do well in Pokemon. The one complaint he had was you can't find a good deck online. So if you're trying to start out and be competitive or learn what a competitive deck is and try to figure out how to use it, before this all came to light, there was really no way to do it. Not a lot of websites would post. It was all super secret. Everybody had their own their own group they played with. And then you didn't. If you associated with one member from a different group and you released a deck, by gosh, you were banned from our group. You were not, so I think the net decking, part of it does help newer players coming into the game to understand how to build a deck, give them a chance to build it, and try to figure out how to use it. And that didn't exist in the world of Pokemon back in the day when we played. You did not release a deck list. If someone at a regionals on your staff copied down a deck list and built it, and a player became aware of it, they would call you and complain or email you because decks were super secret. If you wanted to figure them out, you had to play them, try to write it down, memorize it, become their friend, ask them for their list. So from a pro Magic player that came into the game who actually played on the pro tour, that was his biggest complaint. And, of course, he immediately took to Eric, and they just had a blast playing. So I think it helps a little bit in that area. It does kind of take a little bit more of the creativity or the element of surprise out of things, which back in the day when you mixed with other people from other states, you're playing decks in Florida, and we got to Tennessee one time, and we're like, who the hell plays this stuff? You know, we're all just sitting around going, who plays this card? And they beat us with it. You know, we were like, how this happened? We all went home really salty because we were all right to Tennessee. So the net decking kind of takes a little bit of that away. More, I think there was a lot more, to some degree, there was a little bit more creativity by area. Mm-hmm. Everybody in a different area played a different style of deck. But now with net decking, it's becoming across the board. Everybody everywhere kind of plays the same things. But before we had net decking, you really did have a variety of decks. You'd show up to Nationals. Oh, Eric was so salty one year when he played a Tangrowth deck and lost to it in round one. And of course, the guy never won again. But so overseas, you would even have more variety. But now with the net decking, I feel like a lot of decks are just becoming the same old, same old.
The same really, 60 card list you're playing three times throughout the
everywhere tournament. You go. And that doesn't seem as much fun as the element of surprise. But then again, I'm not going for a world's invite like the other people. And I think it has created a lot of, you'll see tournaments where all the same decks are winning almost card for list.
Yeah, it's just like we had London Internationals. It was 5 Evettel. Mm-hmm. In top 8, and then now you had Australia. There was 5 Decidueye decks in top 8. Mm-hmm. People just end up playing the same thing.
The same thing.
This is what wins. This is what we play. So now, it's really interesting to see online too, because I've noticed I'm in a lot of Pokemon communities, and I see a lot of people discouraging mm-hmm. players from playing certain lists and stuff like that because it doesn't match what's meta. It doesn't match like the standard. But back in the day, you could surprise the meta because you're playing something completely different.
Yeah, that's what we usually, a lot of the times, we had our meta decks, but that's where Eric's gifts and talents came in. I swear, the kid just dumped out a binder on the floor, I swear, and just said, oh, I'll build a deck with this. And then we build it, and then it would just win, and we're like, how'd you do that? And that, I think that's part of it. There's not a lot of, people do discourage you from playing the meta, but that's how you find new decks that win. Mm-hmm. I really, most years, Nationals and Worlds every year was won by a deck that really wasn't the meta for the most part. Some deck that came out this past Nationals, at least in Masters, it was the Japanese player that won with it.
Or yeah, that was Worlds. Won with Nick Odno, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. So Nationals and Worlds, by usual standards, I think there's a couple decks from the meta but used to just this deck would come out of nowhere and just went, well, the Wailord deck that won Nationals that came out of nowhere. And I don't think they would have exposed that Wailord deck until Worlds, but they didn't have their Worlds invite, so they used it to get to Worlds. So usually when you look back through time, I mean, there's always going to be meta decks here and there that have won it. But as a whole, there's always this surprise deck that came out of nowhere that nobody saw coming that does exceedingly well. And if not, continues on to win. So yeah, a lot of people do discourage it, but that's where I think the internet becomes a bad thing. But as far as putting lists out there for newer players, I think it's a valuable asset to them. Mm-hmm. I really think it's a valuable asset.
That's awesome. Do you have any more, Gator? I have like one that I want to like cap off with.
All right. Let me see. What did I have on my list? Oh, I just wanted to touch on briefly. So you talked about Miranda playing. You've played. There's been a contention in the community and different groups where it's girls in Pokemon, women in Pokemon, and how either are they discouraged? Are they encouraged? Like, what is your take as a, like, you know, pretty much queen bee of Pokemon at this point? Like, when it comes to just being there from an originality standpoint, you've done everything. You've been a player, an organizer, a judge. What is your take when it comes to women in Pokemon community?
Well, I think the men like to encourage them because they're such a rare commodity. You ever see a fairly decent-looking girl at a Pokemon event and how many players are surrounding her? No, I think everybody just tries to encourage people. I try to be a little bit more supportive of girls and try to really encourage them to play because I think there's a place for them in the game and try to cheer them on when they're young and stuff. But no, I think there's a place for girls, but it is predominantly guy involved. But no, I think from the boys, they get a lot of attention when it comes to, I'll help you build your deck and test play with you. So I think the guys are particularly supportive of the women.
Well, see, because you get the reports I hear are, you know, a guy loses to a girl and he's salty and he's like, I can't believe I lost to a girl. You know, it's not him. I can't believe I lost to a better player. It's because I lost to a girl. Or they feel like they're getting creeped on, or like, oh, why aren't you playing a fairy deck? Like these kinds of this is the stuff I hear from feedback from other girls that play. So I didn't know what your take on it was.
My take, I won't tolerate that at events. If they're being like down on the girls or making fun or making some derogatory mark, I just pick on their egos. What, you can't handle losing to a girl who's better than you? So their little egos need to get in check. But I think I heard that quite a bit in the day too. But so it just depends on the players. But if in my tournaments, I try to make sure that everybody's just treated fairly. And they should encourage and not be upset it's a girl. It's just a better player. Mm-hmm. The one I heard most back in my day was, I got beat by a Pokemon. Boy, you should. Oh, the salt when they would lose to some Pokemon with a deck who beat them and they're a pro player and how this happened. And I'm like, well, you should have won. And I was never real supportive of their derogatory remarks to them and really just kind of put them in their place. And if they said anything that I thought was offensive, I would just be like, you can either calm down or leave the event now. This is inappropriate behavior. So I'm always listening at my tournaments for people that are saying just inappropriate things in general that could offend people. But I had no tolerance for it. And I would always just sort of snipe at their little egos because I found it really fun.
And then just to follow up to that, just real quick, Pokemon community being as inclusive as it is, in your experience judging in regionals and stuff, how do you deal with like special needs players? Like I noticed that some people I've met special needs players as I've played through the game. You know, what's been your interaction with that? How open do you think Pokemon is? Do you think it's an inclusive community?
Oh, I've had a lot of experience with that and gotten lots of compliments from parents on how well I deal with special needs children. Even Pokemon themselves have recognized me for that. I'm very supportive of special needs. And I've also like talked to players before rounds. And I talk to the parents, like, what is your specific child's needs? What triggers them? What doesn't trigger them? What do I need to be aware of here today? And I even had a special needs kid hit me once at an event and just kind of tried to move past it. But I always try to talk to the parents beforehand and try to learn what their child needs to be a success for today and what do I need to really be aware of. And then I'll always try to talk to their opponents before the game to let them know of certain issues and to be very aware of it. Mm-hmm. I believe there's a really big place. Over the years, I've dealt with a lot of children with a lot of learning disabilities, and I really feel like that you have to take the stance and learn about the disabilities and what the disabilities mean to the children and how they affect kids. And that's one thing I've learned through Pokemon is a lot about disabilities and how they affect children and or adults and how to handle them better and through research and talking to parents. So my thing is, yeah, there's a place for them. And I try to be super supportive of them in absolutely any way I can by talking to the parents and informing their opponents of what needs to happen and just keeping an eye on them. And sometimes I've even just moved them to the front of the room, gave them their own table to just make sure someone was always overseeing the situation so that their day was a success. I think that's a good place for them to be because it's very social. Usually you're around nice people. So I think it's a really good place for people with disabilities to bring their kids.
See, I ask that because, you know, personally, I have a brother who's special needs. And then also, too, we have a lot of parents that listen to the show. We mm-hmm. have people, we have a very wide audience that comes in. And I think it's important for everyone to hear that, you know, the level of inclusion when it comes to girls, special needs, minorities, that Pokemon is a loving, open community versus a, mm-hmm. you know, an insular, mean bitter place.
My advice on that is if you're a girl and you're hearing derogatory mean remarks made, address it with the PTO, the person running the event, to ask them to do something that's offensive. But especially if you're a parent of a special needs child, some people aren't as in tune to it. So before the event, to either call the organizer if you have the phone number or the day you get there, arrive at the beginning of registration and be very clear about your child's needs and what the problems are. And is there a way to accommodate? That's really the best way to go about it. I get a lot of calls from special need parents. I want to bring my child, but what can be done? So that's my recommendation. If you have a special needs child and you want to bring them into Pokemon, talk to the local PTO in the area. And I also recommend you take them to league in the local area to get them used to the players, into the smaller tournaments, and kind of work your way into it and let the PTO become familiar with your child and learn a lot about them. So I really believe that's the right avenue, is first contacting the organizers and letting them know and try to give them as much information as you can prior to the event. And then introducing them at a low level, start with leagues, maybe some league cups, and kind of work from there up into the bigger event. Just don't show up at a regionals and here I am. Let's make this work.
I think that advice is applicable too to just parents getting their kids started in general.
Right.
You know, if or you as a regular person. So if you're a 20-something-year-old just getting into the game, there's no problem contacting your local league organizer. There's no problem like coming to league and learning. You know, it's one thing to play the Pokemon game online or think about playing it. It's another thing to get involved. But the organizers are interested, the organizers are engaged, and I think everybody wants everyone else to have a good time. Because at the end of the day, it's about playing Pokemon. So,
oh yeah,
I think
yeah.
making friends.
Yeah, and making friends.
Yeah,
that's why we started Puckle, right? Like
exactly, absolutely.
Match had no friends in like Gen 4, which is wrong. Nobody likes Gen 4.
But that's kind of true. Important if you're dealing with special needs, I really feel like in general.
Mm-hmm.
That's what good. I wanted to hear. Just wanted to like make sure everybody had that message and loud and no, clear.
That's a good message. Somebody
knows what they're talking about. Like,
you'd be surprised how many players don't understand that they can talk to the organizer about an issue or appeal rulings to a head judge, even though you tell them, and they're afraid to do it. They're afraid they're going to get in trouble. And I hear that so many times. And it's like, no, if you ever have a problem, you look so busy. I'm never too busy to talk to you or take the time out to help you with a situation. I'm always going to look busy because there's always something to do. But I've always stopped. And that's one of the things I think people appreciated at regionals, as big as regionals was, if they had a problem, they knew that they could come to me and I would deal with it and I took it seriously and I care and you care and you had concern. I don't think a lot of players realize that you can. They'll go online and whine and complain. But when they were at the event, they didn't say anything for anything to be done differently. So I think that's really important for all players to understand. Mm-hmm. As a player, you need to address the chain of command properly. There is one. And I don't think a lot of players get that.
Unless they're going to certain regionals, which we're not going to name names or point people out or say anything. Just there, if you're tagged into the Pokemon community, you know which organizers and which events are not.
Right, but then, and then as a secondary measure, if you do talk to an organizer and they don't really aren't receptive to it, there's the customer service portal online to write a nice letter to it, because things will never change if you as players don't play an active role when things are going right or wrong. And that's just the long and the short of it. I have so many people that complain about an event, and it's like, did you write anybody to let them know? Or did you just go online and rant for 2 hours? Pokemon's not going to go on your Facebook page, go on, this, that, and other, whatever fan website you post to. And when you're just running someone into a ground, it's not helpful. So what they really need is for you to write a well-constructed letter of the situation, explaining what happens, what the problems were, so that they have a better understanding how to address the organizer. I've gotten a phone call before. We got a letter. Can you tell us what happened? And that's how things change and get better. So you need to know there are avenues to go above the organizer. But the first thing they're going to ask you, did you talk to the organizer? And if you say no, well, you didn't try to resolve the issue on site and even give them a chance. Of course, they're still going to talk to the organizer, but you didn't give them a chance. But if you gave them the chance and you don't get results, write customer service. It's in your account. And they take those letters seriously and they do address issues with us when things go right or wrong.
Mm-hmm. That's important to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, that does it for me.
All right, so
I did want to know where my League Cup promo is, but that's on.
I got an email that said they were mailing them directly to all the players. You haven't got that yet?
Nope.
Yeah, I got an email saying they were going to handle mailing those to all the players through their trainer club account addresses, and I have a link to check on the progress. It's going well. No one's gotten them.
We're all in the same boat.
Yeah, you're all swimming in the same boat.
Oh, man.
It's been a little bit chaotic on that end for league supplies, league promos, getting stuff out. It's been problematic.
So we need to send support tickets is what you're saying.
That's what a lot of people have started doing at this point. I said, I got an email stating this. I don't know what you write customer service and support tickets. We're not getting our supplies, and eventually they'll do it.
It's the warehouse's fault. That's the
the standard thing is, who can I pass the buck to next? It's like any other organization. Let me see. I was in charge of the League Cup. I dropped the boat. this happens, so who can I pass it on to? And then next thing you know, the guy sweeping the floor in the warehouse suddenly got all the blame. The league promos didn't go out. And he was the janitor who cleaned the bathrooms. So that's how far it can go down the level of the ranks.
All right, Thatch, I'll throw it to you for the last question.
Okay, last question. This is the big one. What's your favorite Pokemon?
Blastoise. Always has.
Oh, why is that?
Cannons just look amazing. Even though my tattoo is Mewtwo, because it looked cooler, Blastoise, he just looks badass. I just have no idea why. I've always been fascinated with him.
What is your opinion on Mega Blastoise?
Hey, he's all right. I still just like the Blastoise EX with the double cannons. It just has that, I don't know, it just always has appealed to me. The one cannon isn't quite as nice.
This is wrist cannons. You know, you punch people in the face. I had to make that. I had to go there. All right. So that's it then. Thank you very much for this has been wonderful. It's been a blast listening to your stories and everything. So thank you very much for doing that. So I think
because we still have to her story of William Hung meeting her.
that was awesome.
We'll save that. We'll put a pin in it. We'll have Heidi back on again.
Put a pin. Yes, absolutely. And,
save that story as a teaser for next time.
All right. So
excited to meet you. There's a big difference.
Yeah. Oh man. So so that's it for today. Social medias, we got Twitter, we're at Puckle Podcast. Facebook, we're at facebook.com/PucklePodcast. You can check us out on our subreddit, r/Puckle. Tumblr, which is PucklePodcast.tumblr.com. You can leave us iTunes reviews, which we really like hearing. And if you want to support the show, you can go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/PucklePodcast. Other than that, though, I think that's everything. So thank you once again, Heidi.
Pokemon 15 questions?
We want to do Pokemon 15 questions. That's right.
So we'll do that as a bonus.
Let's do that as a bonus.
So you guys need to listen to the closing theme, and then you get Pokemon 15 questions from us.
Exactly. All right, so I guess this one's in Saffron. We're in Goldenrod.
Goldenrod City.
That's right, we're in Goldenrod today. So in Goldenrod City, it's, do I say it now? I asked 15 questions. That's a good
it's
question.
It's still closing time.
Yeah, it's still closing time. And welcome to Pokemon 15 Questions. I get to play the part of Jushiro today and ask the question. I don't think I've ever been able to do this, even on the live shows. So I'm pretty excited. So as always, no computers, no looking things up. And you're not allowed to ask generation questions or number questions, as far as I'm told. So because I got yelled at last time. So that's how it's going to work. So if you guys are ready, we're ready to go. I have a Pokemon all picked out, and let's see if we can stump you guys at Pokemon 15 questions. So we'll let Gator go first.
All right. Is this Pokemon a part of an evolutionary line?
Yes. So then it moves to Heidi.
You can just add, you can ask anything you like.
Yeah.
How would you narrow it down? So we know it's part of an evolution line, so it's not a Tauros. It's not a...
Do we want to see if it's dual type?
You can, yeah.
Is it dual type?
Yes.
Is it the first stage of the evolutionary line?
By first stage, are we talking like TCG terms or like...
No, we are talking like...
Like as a basic? In,
is it the basic or slash baby?
No.
Start narrowing it down like you can talk out like, we don't okay. we're not hiring.
Yeah, you're
can,
allowed to talk start, you're allowed to talk
we start talking like color should we start talking
like about? I think maybe you can ask like what's like name one of the common types. Is that one of the dual, is that part of the dual,
one of the common types?
Yeah, so like maybe ask if it's like part water or
it, okay, so yeah, could, okay, is it part water?
No.
Okay, all right, can this Pokemon be found in the Hoenn region?
Let me look that up because I don't know. I have it pulled up, thankfully. Let's see. Where's the section on Bulbapedia where it tells you where to find it? You said in Hoenn, right?
Yes.
Yes.
So it's a dual type. It's not a basic. It's not a water. It's in Hoenn.
Should we ask if it's a stage one? Is it a stage one?
Yes.
For like TCG term stage one.
Yeah, okay, and TCG so terms. Yeah, I understand. She knows middle, TCG way better than me. So
the middle evolution in a set found in Hoenn, not water type.
Fairy.
There are some fairy ones because of Gen 6 being able to go back in there. Mm. Is this a Pokemon you can get as a starter?
No. And I'm going to break Yashira's rules because you asked that question about Hoenn. I'm going to say it's a Mirage Cave just so you don't get too hung up on the Hoenn thing.
Okay. So it was in, so it's not necessarily a Gen 3 Pokemon because Hoenn only Gen 3 until Gen 6. So since it's in a Mirage Cave, it could be
both.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. There's a lot of dual type.
I'm going to try flying or normal.
Sure. Is it a flying Pokemon?
No.
Oof. Is it a normal type?
No.
No. Flying, water, or normal. That's
I don't know how many questions we've done so far.
I think that's 7.
Okay, I'll go with 7. That's a good number.
there's 3 stages. It's a middle stage.
Wait, I didn't say 3 stages.
I said it was I asked if it was a part of an evolutionary line.
Yeah.
Not 3 stages. All right, so it's a... So it could be...
Okay, so it's more, yes, does it have a third stage?
Yeah, you could probably do that.
Does it have a third stage?
No.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, so it's 2-parter dual type. Hmm. Grass. I think grass is a good one. Is it part grass type?
No.
It's not grass, water, flying, or normal. That's like every Pokemon.
Is it fairy type?
No.
Is fairy one of the types?
No.
It is no.
Okay.
I'll answer both those. You'll get it for free.
Ask its height and weight, then we can get
it. You can't.
Is it bigger than 1 inch? No, just kidding.
That's, most of them are. Let's see. So it's the second stage of a 2-parter. So what do we have? Like
no, he that? Said there wasn't a third evolution.
Yeah, it's that second stage of 2 or stage 1 of a 2-parter.
Okay.
So what do we have available to us?
Psychic.
So like Dark. Don Fen could be something because that's his 2-stage line and it's not any of those. We got,
is Don Fen a dual type then?
Don Fen's a dual type. It's a rock ground.
That's true. That's true.
You got stuff like Steelix, who could probably be found there. Since we know it's not an evolutionary Pokemon, like starter. Crap.
Can't be Dratini, any of that.
Nope, it can't be any of the pseudo legendaries.
Uh-huh.
Um,
let's find it. Let's just go. Should we try that?
Try that Grounder.
Yeah.
Is this Pokemon a ground type?
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
You got a hit.
All right.
So your question. What are you gonna do? What two stage ground types are there? Like our stage one, stage two. So we got Donphan's one of them. We got
Steelix.
Steelix is
Steelix.
One of them. We got I think Steelix is Rock Steel, isn't it? When it evolves, I think it's Rock Steel.
Yeah, that would make sense because it's Steelix.
Yeah, so it's not Steel. It's not a ground type. We got Golurk. Because that's a ghost ground.
Yeah.
You want to ask if it's like a humanoid-shaped Pokemon? Because that would like narrow it down.
Is it a humanoid?
Human-shaped, like...
Okay. Is it a human-like-shaped Pokemon?
Are you talking like the Pokedex thing? Or like... Let me see.
Like, does it stand on two legs and have two arms and a head?
Like, yes, it does.
Okay. So it stands on two legs, two arms and a head.
That include babies for like Hitmontop and stuff?
No, because that's... No, I don't think that counts. Because those aren't ground type. Those are both fighting.
Those are fighting.
It's not Dusknoir because that's a three stage now.
Yep.
So ground has two stages. So what else is ground with two stages? It's not Graveler. It's not that line. It's not Donphan. It's not Donphan because Donphan's got... It's on 4 feet. It's not two arms and 2 feet. It still doesn't eliminate Golurk, so we can keep that one in the pocket. What else is dual stage?
Sure they didn't go back and make those? No.
Like, they can end up on the Mirage Island, so it could be anything. Should we ask if it's rock type? A lot of things are ground rock.
Sure.
Is this Pokemon a rock type?
No.
Okay, I'm feeling perhaps, I'm thinking Golurk, because Golurk is all those things, two-stage. I'm going to ask if it's ghost.
Okay, is it ghost type?
Nope.
We're getting close now. We've got like
I'm going to give you two questions. That'd be nice.
Okay. So it's a ground type. It's two-stage evolution. So it's got a basic and it's got an evolved form. It is not water. It's not ghost. It's not
fairy.
It's not rock. Did we ask flying?
I think we did.
We asked flying. It was not.
You did.
It wasn't
okay,
flying.
So
the only type you know is ground.
And we know it's dual. So ground. What else is there? What else is a two-stage ground Pokemon?
That looks like a human.
That'd be human shaped.
I just keep wanting to think Hitmontop.
No, they're not ground. They're not ground.
I know. Well, that's all that keeps coming to my head.
And we know it's not a Gen 7 Pokemon because it's found in Hoenn. So those are all eliminated.
So we're back at Gen 3.
Wait. He said it's not rock type. I was going to say Sandslash. But that's not rock. So we got ground rock. Don't do sand slash. Crap.
I don't think this one would be that rough, but maybe it is.
Huh.
Marowak?
Oh, that's a good one. He wears a skull on his head.
Do you want to try, is it fighting type?
All right, is it fighting type?
No.
What?
So I have, this has to be the Pokemon, we guess. So we have to guess a random Pokemon. That's ground.
You don't think it'd be Sand? Can't be Sandslash?
Sandslash is part rock. It's ground rock.
Did you say it couldn't be rock?
I mean, it can also be ground fire. But that Alolan Sandslash cannot be found, or no, Alolan Sandslash is ground ice, but it cannot be found in Hoenn because it's a Gen 7. And you can't find that Pokemon in Hoenn right now because it's exclusive to the Alola region. So it's not ground fighting, not ground. fuck? What the heck is there?
I don't know. I'm trying to scan my brain.
That's not our brain going off. That's
just... my work laptop's dying.
What's a good ground type? Somebody's at home screaming at their radio. They're driving in their car right now, and they're just
yelling. Ryan would be.
They're just yelling and screaming at us because we're missing the most obvious answer. It's so hard because ground usually paired with one of those types.
Yeah.
Ground fire is not anything really.
Jeez.
I don't know. I think this is a ruse. This is a Digimon we're trying to guess here. So ground and one of those types is not it. So it's not Bunnelby because Bunnelby is ground normal.
But it stands on four legs, not on two.
It stands on two legs, not four.
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah.
But Doof is normal type, so no.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm just trying to think of things that stand on two legs now.
I don't know. That one's hard.
I'm just trying to think of things besides Hitmonchan, Hitmonlee, and Hitmontop that stand on two legs.
Ground. I don't. Do you want to just do something dumb? Like, what do we want to do?
Oh, I like doing dumb things.
Let's do something dumb.
I'm really good at dumb things.
What is. Like, I'm trying to think, like, the desert Pokemon. None of the ones I can think of, they're all like stage, they have stage two evolutions, so they're not like the second stage.
Sure, when I play, you don't get it.
Yeah.
Who's trying to make me look bad?
Do we want to just like say, like, we can say Marowak and just. I don't know.
Is it Marowak part?
I think it's fighting ground, I'm pretty sure. It might just be great. It might be. It's not ground. If it's ground rock, then we're wrong too. So
let's
like,
just say it.
Marowak.
No, no, it's not Marowak. It's actually Excadrill.
Excadrill.
Oh,
he's ground steel.
Ground steel.
And he stands on his two legs and everything.
Excadrill. I even have a plushie of him in the room.
We lost.
It's okay. You can go home with participation trophies. But that's it for today, guys. So we'll catch Jushiro back on the next TCG cast.
All right, bye.
Bye.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.